Hi everyone, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. I'm so happy that you're here and thankful to those of you who are able and kind enough to support this channel, either through direct donations at paypalme.com or through my website at threefoldlotus.com or Patreon. However you do it, whether you subscribe or just occasional donations, some of you have sent me actual things like candles and bells and things to aid in not only my practice and my ability to teach and make these videos, because without you I couldn't do this, but also help more broadly the Sangha, all of us, and those I come into contact with, even though in my area they're few and sometimes far between, each one is absolutely precious. So anyway, thank you. This Gosho that we're about to dive into, I guess in a broad sense, is about cause and effect. But specifically, it's about something that I think even new practitioners certainly, but even those of us who've practiced for a long time are sometimes sources of mixed feelings, I'll say. And a lot of that is because, well, we're Westerners, and I'm not saying that Easterners don't deal with this as well, or Northerners or Southerners or wherever. Culturally, we all have different, in Buddhism, we'd say karmic realities, right? But what does that mean? It means that there are certain values and judgments and ways of seeing life in general that are kind of inculcated into our education, our information, our language, the way we communicate ourselves and ourselves to one another and understand others. Those things aren't the same everywhere and for everyone. I know we're so self-centric, we kind of, we think that way. We think if we see it that way, doesn't everybody see it that way? But not so. And Buddhism spends a lot of time looking at that question. But more specifically, that's the broader picture. More specifically, how does that question apply to our practice of Buddhism? And so Nichiren was asked, by the way, if I sound congested and so forth, you probably know by now I suffer from allergies and other things, and I'm a little under the weather today, but that doesn't prohibit our practice, does it? So Nichiren is responding to a woman in this case, you'll hear that in the letter. I point that out not because it's oh so amazing that a woman is practicing Buddhism, but in the context of the 13th century shogunate samurai Japan, embroiled in civil war war attacks from abroad, and extremely authoritarian society, women's place in that time, as we still have vestiges today. So I hear you, you know, but I don't want to promulgate that differentiation. Men and women are different, of course, but the idea that a woman would take it upon herself to practice Buddhism, let alone on her own ask questions about it, maybe in secret to her husband, she might have the courage to question and seek answers from her husband. But certainly outside her family, my goodness, a strong woman. We like that today, but in 13th century Japan, even some might say in modern day Japan, it's inconceivable, right? There's the word, my favorite word from the Princess Bride movie, inconceivable. Anyway, entertain must be the allergy medications. Excuse me. Okay, so this one's called the embankments of a resolute mind, or resolve, right? So this is going to center around that whole thing with cause and effect as pertains to Buddhist practice and Buddhist teachings. Now, I brought up the Western thing because Western religions tend to operate in a very authoritarian manner and a very male-centric manner, and operate very much like authoritarianism from a basis of fear and what's the other word I'm looking for? Guilt. Just that simple. So, when we read and learn and study about these concepts of cause and effect in Buddhism, we tend to look at those attributes, that concept with a lens that is skewed to words like retribution and see, cause and effect, they're very scientific words, aren't they? There's an action, whether it's in thought or word or deed, an actual physical action, and that there is an effect. You push your hand through water, there's an effect. There's an effect on the hand, there's an effect on the water, there's an effect on the area the water is in, there's an effect on the area between you and the hand, pulling away, creating a vacuum, creating pressure. There's loads of effects. It's very complex. But oh, cause and effect. It sounds very direct and simple. But if anyone who studies Buddhism at any length, certainly the writings on Buddhism, you'll see that the minutiae that Buddhism chases down in any question is never a simple, direct this and that, right? So, I bring all of that up again because the question comes up in this letter about a central aspect of Buddhism, which is our behavior. So, if you can go back to the Four Noble Truths, right? Life is suffering. Suffering is from our mental attachments to everything, and that precipitates all of the suffering. And so, if we want to end suffering, we need to adjust the way our mind works and detach, or not get rid of, not annihilate, but simply change our relationship to this samsaric existence. That's a subtle point. That's not really subtle, but it's a subtle difference in language that isn't often given enough merit in our practice of Buddhism. And by that I mean to simply say you need to cease your attachments, even in the early years of Buddhism and earlier teachings of Buddhism was often taken in a very nihilistic fashion. And it still goes on today. People who misunderstand Buddhism as some kind of a denial or negation of life itself. Nothing can be further from accurate. That's not what Buddhism says. What Buddhism says is, have all of this. Your enlightenment is in this. It's part and parcel of it. But if your mind treats everything you experience as something permanent, something you strive to maintain, something you want to possess, then it is your mind's attitude, your mind's fixations that bring about suffering. So how do we unfix ourselves and simply experience without this impetus to make ours or permanent the thingness of life? Just experience it. That is the enlightenment. You become lighter. You're less bogged down by everything. That's the central point of Buddhism. So, again, to ask about our behavior is, again, referring back to the earlier teachings of the Four Noble Truths, what follows the Four Noble Truths? The Eightfold Path, the Noble Eightfold Path. And if you read about the Eightfold Path, it's all about our behavior. How do we experience and navigate our samsaric life? I'll leave it to you to study on that. I've done videos on it. And if you have questions about it, please ask. I'll gladly provide more videos, maybe on each of the eight paths. I'm thinking out loud here. That could be very useful. But as pertains to this Go Show, this woman asked a question of Nichiren because she's concerned about the effects of the causes that she is making, that her husband is making, that her family is making. And how does that play out karmically with our practice of the Lotus Sutra, Myoho-ren Gekyo? So, good question, but it's huge, right? Because it includes the very concept of cause and effect, especially in Buddhism. So let's just get into it and we'll see where this goes. He begins. In your letter, you ask how the retribution varies according to the degree of slander against the correct teaching. So right away, there's just so much to say there. First of all, I have to again point out that this is a translation. So words like retribution is very Western. I don't know that it actually would be said in that way in the original text. But let's go with it because we're Western. And the idea that retribution varies, or the effect varies depending on the degree of slander against the correct teaching, that's an interesting question, because is slander just slander? Is it good or bad? Or are there varying offenses? It's an interesting question, because if I simply interrupt you as you're speaking because I feel I have to make a point before you end your conversation, I'm being rude. But am I being rude in a very rude way? Or am I just being rude in a crass, uneducated way? Or am I being intentionally rude to put you in your place because I feel superior? Oh, you can feel the attitude shifting from very self-centric to, they're all self-centric because I'm interrupting your conversation, but is it because I'm wanting to be helpful and agree with you? Am I thinking I'm more important, less important? You're less important or more important? Am I being supportive or destructive? See, there's all these varying degrees, right? On the one hand, I'm being rude and I should be disciplined for it. On the other hand, should that discipline be harsh or slight? Right? So that kind of a question. When we're practicing, is everything that we do that's not quite right, or that we... How many times in your practice, for instance, have you learned something new, but read something new or heard something new to your experience that has made you question, oh my goodness, I haven't been doing this quite right all this time. Or, wow, I've really been getting this wrong all this time, right? So... did you have a clue that maybe you weren't doing this right, but you decided you were going to do it your way? Or were you completely clueless? Are you now filled with doubt? Were you not filled with doubt? See, there's variations, right? So, Nichiren says, to begin with, the Lotus Sutra was taught to lead all living beings to the Buddha way. The Buddha way being, as we live this life, we endeavor to stay in our Buddha mind state as long as and as much as possible, so that we don't cave in to our distractions of attachments and so on and so forth, that we see with clarity the world as it happens, with great appreciation and joy, because everything is new all the time and precious. The Buddha way, being bodhisattva, being appreciative and helping others to see that path. That's the Buddha way, right? Only those who have a resolute mind and conviction in it, however, will attain Buddhahood. Well, yeah, that's true, but it's also, that's a pretty big statement. Because if you're just lackadaisically practicing Buddhism and you're not making profound adjustments to your attachments, to your perception of what life is, requiring a resolute mind, then you're not going to attain Buddhahood, because Buddhahood is something that takes work, it takes effort. It's not a natural samsaric mental experience. It's always here, it's there for us to reveal, to experience, to see, but our samsaric attachments veil, they obfuscate our Buddha-ness, our Buddha way. As the sutra says, those who slander it fall into the great citadel of the hell of incessant suffering. So now, completely the other way, if not only do we know about Myoho Renge Kyo, but we belittle it or we slander it. I mean, in other words, slander can be everything from being lackadaisical and unserious about it to working actively against it and saying, that thing, that's for children, that's, you know, I don't play that, you know, I'm a this or I'm a that, and I believe in these things, or I believe in these omniscient things, or I believe in the rule of the emperor or whatever, then you're going against the very fabric of what life is, because Myoho Renge Kyo is that fabric. It is the expletory and explanation of the process of life. So anything you do to either put it down or work against it or ignore it are just varying degrees of ignorance or slander slander being something directed at it, ignorance being simply not knowing about it, or not paying attention to it, or not endeavoring to know it, right? So there are all these different degrees of slander again. But any of them mean that you're going to fall into the great citadel of the hell of incessant suffering. So what is the great citadel of incessant suffering? It's not some other place. It's not underground. It's not the Christian hell or the Muslim hell or the Mormon hell or any of the hells. It's simply the plot of samsara. Without enlightenment, we are living in hell because everything we do is such a critical thing because we're so attached to it, because we want it to stay mind, every single moment of every day. Our little monkeys in there going, yeah, me. Well, that's the hell of incessant suffering. You don't experience it anywhere else but in this samsaric life. So from the standpoint of Buddhism, choosing not to be enlightened, not to awaken to our higher, most highest potential, our Buddha-ness, we then are choosing to slide into this arduous existence, waiting to die, waiting for something to wake us up and have a moment of yay, and then immediately, oh, back in life. Oh, it's so arduous. Oh, I got to do this every day. Oh, you don't like me. I don't like you. I love you. You don't love me. You love me. Oh, all of this turmoil. In Buddhism, this is the hell of incessant suffering. It never ends until, well, it ends. Death. Right? Which isn't the end of life. It's just the end of your experience. Why choose to live this life that way? Right? This is what started Buddhism in the first place, was this observation that people just, in so many ways, from the trauma of birth to sickness, old age, and death, all life seems to be a negotiated suffering. Why live that way? Can't we live in a better way? The Buddha way, right? So, as the sutra states, quote, if a person fails to have resolve, a resolute mind and conviction, but instead slanders this sutra. Now the resolve, the resolute mind and conviction is in Myoho Renge Kyo. Instead slanders this Myoho Renge Kyo, immediately he will destroy the seeds of for becoming a Buddha in this world. Well, of course. When his life comes to an end, he will enter the Avicca hell. So, now, I don't know. I don't know how this is translated, and I apologize. These medications and this allergies keeps me very dry mouth, so I simply have to keep putting fluids into my mouth, and I don't mean to be rude. I apologize. But I won't be able to speak clearly unless I do it. So this whole thing of when his life comes to an end, he will enter the Avicca hell. I suppose human beings have always done this. Projected the onus, the ominousness of their lives as viewed from the terminal point of when the life no longer goes on. But you have to keep in mind that Buddhism understands that life is a moment-to-moment experience, right? So when you hear statements like, when his life comes to an end, he'll enter the VGL, well, your life just came to an end a moment ago. So if you're not of resolute mind, listen carefully now. If you don't have resolve in Myoho Renge Kyo, then this very next moment you will be in the Avicca hell. If in the birth of the next moment you're of a mind of Myoho Renge Kyo, then you are on a path of the Buddha way. But if you slander, or if you are not of a resolute mind in your Buddha way, in Myoho Renge Kyo, in your awakening, then the very next moment, when this moment dies, after this moment's death, you will enter the Avicii hell, the next moment of your life. Does that make sense? It's, in other words, a very immediate reaction. So if you're practicing Buddhism and you're chanting and you have a gohonzon, a mandala, and you're chanting to gohonzon, then each moment, each discrete moment, with every effort that you're making in your mind, chanting with your mouth, your body, your concentration, your resolute mind, to awaken your Buddha nature, then you can attain Buddhahood immediately. That's Myoho Renge Kyo. The moment you stop, turn away, and your emotions kick in. Why do your emotions kick in? Because something you're attached to is disturbing your resolute mind, and you're pulled away from it, there's hell. It's that immediate. Now, the glow you might talk of after you fuse with your mandala, and you've been chanting for 2 hours, and you feel light and airy, and you move around the house, and you hear people talking, or you're experiencing your earthly samsaric life. That residual feeling is your Buddha way. Everything looks wonderful, and it's you get this sense of satisfaction, kind of a light smile on your face. You're experiencing Buddhahood until that moment that you stub your toe, or that somebody calls you in another room. Now, maintaining that life state in the face of stubbing your toe or being interrupted by somebody else, wow, that's amazing. That's what we're aiming for. We're trying to live in Myoho Renge Kyo. But I give you that example to illustrate that it takes some work to get to that point, doesn't it? I mean, how quickly does your life experience change when your little toe smashes up into the edge of a table or something? Yikes, right? But it often happens in much smaller increments. And you slowly slide back into samsara. That's a mental state. That's a life condition. And our whole practice is about trying to stay in that Buddha way. Not an easy task. So, there are many degrees of slander, Nichiren writes, shallow and profound, slight and heavy. Even among those who embrace the Lotus Sutra, very few uphold it steadfastly, both in mind and in deed. Few are the practitioners who are able to uphold the sutra, but those who do not will not suffer serious retribution, even if they commit minor offenses against the sutra, because they're wholeheartedly committed to it, right? Their resolute mind and conviction expiates their offenses as surely as a flood extinguishes tiny fires. So that's good news, right? So if you're committed and you're chanting and you're studying and you have moments where, you know, whether it's doubt or whether it's stubbing your toe or whatever, it's not like you destroy your whole practice. You're still committed to Myoho Rengekyo. You're just going to have little blips that, in fact, those little blips, as I said, will be minimized, greatly minimized. Maybe you'll run your toe into something, but it won't hurt so much, and it won't be a broken toe. Maybe it'll be tender for a little while, and you'll be okay. It'll be minimized. Maybe you won't fly into an argument where you normally would. Maybe you'll just be annoyed, and you'll get through it, and then take it to Gohanzen and chant, and it actually changed karma. That's great. That's human revolution, right? Let's see where we are time-wise. Okay. The Nirvana Sutra states, quote, if even a good monk sees someone destroying the teachings and disregards him, now this is a different kind of slander, failing to reproach him, to oust him, or to punish him for his offense, then you should realize that that monk is betraying the Buddha's teaching. So now that's a much larger concept. That's not just your behavior, my behavior. This is our behavior in respect to what we witness others do. And if we fail to reproach them, correct them, or tell them to leave, you're not behaving correctly, then we become complicit, don't we? It's not like we're doing, well, it depends on the degree of the slander, right? And if you let it happen, then you are no longer in your Buddha way. You're firmly in samsara now. And so your resolve is shaky. See how all of this is connected? But if he ousts the destroyer of the law, reproaches him, or punishes him, then he is my disciple and a true voice hearer, end quote. So these are Shakyamuni's words. Nichiren's just quoting him. See, this is nothing new. That part of your resolve to practice Myoho Rengekyo is that you must see it reflected in your environment, because back to what I've been saying over and over again, our environment is us. So if in our environment there is defilement going around, then that is ours to repair, to redress. Right? For the same reason that I'm not a thief, but if I find that one of my friends regularly participates or initiates acts of thievery, and I allow it to go unchecked and can remain a friend to this person, then in a way I'm kind of sponsoring this person's behavior. And over time, as Nichiren has talked about before, and so is Shakyamuni, many stories and many sutras talk about the negative influence of keeping that influence around you. It seeps into your nature. And then you start to forgive your little lapses. And you may, in fact, become a thief yourself. So this is why, from the get-go, if you see this behavior, you must say something. You must correct it. And if it continues, then you need to cease that relationship. Right? Buddhism or no, this is just common sense. Our social understanding of how we do things, life-affirming or life-unaffirming. Right? You don't have to be a Buddhist to understand that. But in Buddhism, we take it to the next degree in that this is an effect that will influence our lives, our nature, our Buddha-ness is being affected and destroyed by that behavior if we do nothing about it. If we do something about it, it's just like chanting. It's like we're establishing once again the superiority of the Buddha way. And that helps our mind, our actions, our lives, our life condition to resolve, to be more resolute. Do you see that resolute mind? Our resolve in Myoho Rengekyo isn't just an ethereal mental condition that we experience when we chant, but our resolve, it takes place in our daily life, in our daily activity. That's part of our conviction. Our resolute mind is in the way that we behave and the way that we demand our environment to behave, because that too is you and I. This is a short gosho, but it's a critical point of understanding in Buddhism. How does Myoho Rengekyo work? What is the Buddha way? What is it to be a bodhisattva? To be a bodhisattva is to correct the thief, correct the behavior, correct this other person. No, you don't behave that way. That's being a bodhisattva. In terms of Myoho Rengekyo, you are a better person than that. You can experience a better life than that. You are defiling this life experience. Stop it. Get out. Redress your actions. This is what Nichiren is saying. This is what Shakyamuni is saying. This is what Buddhism is saying. This admonition, he continues, urged me on, and I spoke out against slander in spite of the various persecutions I faced, because I would have become an enemy of the Buddha's teachings if I had not. As much as we've learned about Nichiren's life by now, you know the persecutions he's faced. They were going to behead him. They exiled him from the mainland. They stuck him out in a wintry little shack out on Sado Island. They wanted to silence him. And yet, he was never killed. This is the moderation of being a proponent of Buddhahood, of Myoho Rengekyo. That doesn't mean his life wasn't difficult, but it means that he was protected. That's also hard to understand, especially for those new to Buddhism. He goes on, slander can be either minor or serious, however, and sometimes we should overlook it rather than attack it. If it's a minor offense, if it's made out of an inexperience or ignorance, sometimes it calls for gentle redress or a quiet reminder, right? Like you would teach a child who doesn't know better. You just point it out. Don't attack it. Don't, you know, punish outright. Punishment is for those who are truly conscious of the cause they're making. But sometimes you make causes without knowing it, right? You and I still do. So if we were severely reprimanded for every little offense that we make, life would be truly difficult, right? So there's room for moderation here. You have to exercise judgment. But if after you gently remind somebody repeatedly, it becomes obvious that now that cause is no longer accidental. They're focused and I must be stronger in my admonitions, right? Always life-affirming kind of way. The true word and Tendai schools slander the Lotus Sutra and should be severely rebuked. So now he's going back to a theme that's very current. And this woman is obviously being confronted by friends and others. Remember, followers of Nichiren's teachings of the Lotus Sutra were being very critically attacked verbally and physically by other people who are just authoritarian people following the rules of the authorities, protecting their own butts, were very critical of you if you followed Nichiren or the Lotus Sutra teachings, right? The True Word School and the Zen schools and the Tendai schools at the time were rebuking the Lotus Sutra as some inferior childish teaching. So they were just going along with it. But if you knew better and you were practicing Lotus Sutra, Myoho Renge Kyo, you were looked upon as everything from stupid to an enemy. So Nichiren is telling this woman, no, we have to rebuke what they're saying. It's the only path forward. So be careful who you associate with, and don't be swayed, right? But without great wisdom, it is hard to differentiate correctly between their doctrines and the teachings that Nichiren spreads. Yeah, it takes some doctrinal knowledge. It takes some study. Nichiren is saying, I realize that I'm very studied on this and not everyone has studied and knows the things that I've studied. So I encourage you, stick with me, but don't get into arguments that you're not prepared to argue, because they have well-formed arguments and they may, you know, if not harm you physically or financially, in your mind, they may harm you because they will influence you. Therefore, at times we refrain from attacking them, just as I did on establishing the correct teachings for peace in the land. So this was a major remonstration that Nichiren wrote, the Risho and Kokuron, to the shogunate of Japan, the ruling classes, to tell them that they were practicing. Remember, we've talked about this. Government and religion were very closely tied together at the time. Well, even to this day, right, in many areas of the world, including our own in a way. At any rate, he remonstrated powerfully against them, but he stuck to one of the schools that was used quite often in their adjudications of how to run the country. And he steered clear of, I think it was the Nembutsu, and the true word was the main thrust of his anger. So, rebuking. But even in that, he's saying he showed restraint, because to take all of them on might have ensured an even greater reaction from the elite. Whether or not we speak out, he says, it will be difficult for those who have committed the grave offense of slander to avoid retribution. It doesn't have to come from us. They'll get their retribution immediately, right? Our seeing, hearing, and making no attempt to stop slander that, if we spoke out, could be avoided, destroys our gifts of sight and hearing, and utterly merciless. So, if we see that behaviors in others are so so powerfully negative that there are disastrous things about to happen because of their behavior. If you see somebody beating somebody else, let's say a couple of guys beating up an old woman, trying to take her purse, that's obvious. Something needs to be done. And you just stand there and look and don't do anything. Don't even holler out. Don't threaten to call the police, yell fire, something to intervene. Then you lose. You've allowed that to win, in a sense, against your Buddha way. That's not right. But if even all you do is yell fire and try to mitigate what's happening, then you are being true to your Buddha nature and theirs, even though they have no reason to understand that at the time. That's not the point. This is about mental state, life condition, your behavior, your resolve, right? With that kind of ichinin. Chang An writes, quote, "If one befriends another person but lacks the mercy to correct him, one is in fact his enemy." So there it is, plain and simple. "The consequences of a grave offense are extremely difficult to erase. The most important thing is to continually strengthen our wish to benefit others." Again, as I've often said, Buddhism comes down to attitude. Because we're not always confronted with moments of great decision when it comes to people's behavior. But we're always a little bit in the midst of it, right? So, do you behave out of a wish for the best expression of people's natures around you? Are you committed to Myoho-ren Geikyo in your life, you and environs? Is this how you walk through life? How profound is that wish? That wish is a weird word. Commitment? "When a person's offense is minor, admonishment is sometimes called for." You shouldn't do that. "But at other times, it may be unnecessary." Oops, that didn't work out, did it? Okay, well, let's try better, you know. Like you're talking to a child, right? "For there are those who may correct themselves without being told." Well, we see that in our children too. Not often in adults, but it happens. "Reprove a person for slander when necessary, so that you can forestall for both of you the consequences of an offense." There it is restated again. Your environment is you. So if you see an offense being made, especially by a friend, if you consider yourself a friend, you should redress them gently. But remind them that that's not acceptable, that that's not the way to create our maximal potential, right? It's not proper. I don't want to witness it again. Do not do that. If you continue to do that, you must leave. You are a good friend if you do that. If you don't do that, then you're complicit. "Then you should forgive that person." It's okay, I understand. Just be mindful. "The point is that even minor slanders may lead to serious ones. And then the effects one must suffer would be far worse." This is what Chang An means when he writes, quote, "One who rids the offender of evil is acting as his parent," end quote. Isn't that what I was just saying? All right. We have a couple more pages, but I fear I've already run a little long. So I'm going to pause here and we will continue with part two. Again, this is a short letter, but It's really dense with information, I think. Anyway, we'll talk more about it in the next video. Right now, I think you have something to think about. And it's just another reminder of how our practice isn't as simple as it might seem. Simple conceptually, but quite difficult to enact with consistency in our daily lives. Myoho Renge Kyo. Myoho Renge Kyo all the day. How amazing would that be? I encourage you, keep chanting. Watch videos, listen to podcasts, however you can get support to strengthen your practice. It certainly helps me to do this, so I appreciate you being here. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, and I look forward to part 2. See you then.